This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Former Vice President Joe Biden wants net zero carbon emissions no later than 2050 if elected president. But what would that mean for corn ethanol, a key ingredient of blended gasoline? Ethanol backers have differing answers. Renewable Fuels Association President and Chief Executive Officer Jeff Cooper says even an aggressive net zero carbon emissions program won't eliminate liquid fuel in the U.S. overnight.
That transition is going to play out over decades. And so if we are incrementally using less gasoline and diesel fuel, as long as renewable fuels like ethanol represent an increasing share of the gasoline and diesel fuel consumption, then we can keep and even grow our current levels of production and demand, and that's what we're focused on.
But some ethanol backers in Congress are focused on the longer-term impact of Joe Biden's net zero emissions push. Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley.
Well, I think the idea is that if you can run this country without an internal combustion engine, and I'm sure that's what they have to have in mind, you don't need petroleum or ethanol.
Biden's plan calls for looking at all low and zero carbon technologies, including carbon capture and other fossil fuel-based sources. But Iowa junior Senator Joni Ernst argued during the third night of GOP convention that the Democrats' Green New Deal would eliminate gas-powered cars and basically ban animal agriculture. In other ag news for your Friday, farmers in central Iowa are cleaning up and preparing for an uncertain harvest following the derecho storm earlier on this month. The derecho event cut an 80-mile swath across Iowa, impacting roughly 14 million acres of crops and severely damaging 4 million acres of corn, while soybeans appear to be recovering. Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Hill says the damage is devastating.
Many of our fields are flattened, grain bins destroyed, buildings, roofs were lost, some homes, of course, lost siding and roofs as well. Power lines destroyed, cell service, internet service was all lost. We had 500,000 homes without electricity, and some were still without after about 10 days of extensive repairing.
Hill says harvesting downed corn is difficult and finding storage for harvested crops will be a challenge going forward.
Machines will be slowed, and many of those machines were damaged in their buildings, so a lot of our harvesting machines aren't going to be ready. 57 million bushels of commercial storage and probably 60 million of farm storage has been lost, and we'll be cleaning up for a year or two, so these structures will not be replaced immediately.
From flooding last year, a pandemic this year, and now a derecho, Hill says those events are changing Iowa agriculture permanently.
These events have taken a broad swath out of Iowa, dashed the hopes of a lot of our farmers. Some will be able to recover, others will not. We will depend a lot on insurance and disaster relief, but this will be years before we recover completely, and some farmers will take this opportunity to retire or find a career somewhere else other than the farm.
Again, that was Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Hill. In national ag news out of Washington, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue this week has hinted at more coronavirus food assistance program aid for farmers is on the horizon. Perdue confirmed that the Department of Agriculture is considering, shortly after Labor Day, offering a second wave of CFAP relief during a press call. Funding for the next round of payments would come from the additional $14 billion Congress allocated in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act to replenish the Commodity Credit Corporation account after July 1st of this year. Many agriculture groups say more relief is needed for farmers as the first wave of CFAP will close on September 11th when the sign-up period closes. Although farm groups are lobbying for even more aid, like the $20 billion included in the failed Senate aid package last month, lawmakers are expected to try again in September to pass another round of economic stimulus, but it is uncertain if agriculture will be included. U.S. ag exports in fiscal year 2021 are projected at $140.5 billion. That's up $5.5 billion from previous estimates. The Department of Agriculture this week released its outlook for U.S. agricultural trade report. The report says the increase is primarily driven by higher exports of soybeans and corn. Soybean exports are forecasted up $4.2 billion from fiscal year 2020 to $20.4 billion, largely due to the expected strong demand from China and reduced competition from Brazil. Corn exports are projected up $700 million to $9 billion on expectations of higher export volume. Livestock, poultry, and dairy exports are forecasted up $500 million to $32.3 billion in 2021, led by higher beef and veal, variety meat, dairy, and poultry. Agricultural exports to China are forecasted at $18.5 billion, an increase of $4.5 billion, largely on higher expected soybean sale. Agricultural exports to Canada and Mexico are forecasted at $21 billion and $19.3 billion, respectively. And 2021 U.S. agricultural imports are forecasted at $136 billion, $4.3 billion higher than previous estimates. Moving on to the latest dairy news, the National Milk Producers Federation reminds dairy farmers to sign up for the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. Michael Clemens has this full report.
CFAP is the main method USDA is using to help farmers weather the COVID-19 pandemic. NMPF spokesperson Chris Galen says dairy farmers have received nearly $2 billion, but there is more funding available.
We were one of the groups that helped work with Congress to get the money appropriated back at the end of the winter, and they gave USDA about $16 billion to use. Where we are right now at the end of August, however, is that only about $9 billion of that $16 billion has been claimed by farmers and ranchers of all commodities. For dairy farmers, they've gotten just about $1.7 billion, which is about 20% of that $9.2 billion. So there's certainly money still available, money being left on the table, and that's why we also asked USDA to extend the sign-up deadline.
USDA extended the deadline to September 11th. Galen says there could be another round of CFAP payments early September.
We've heard some rumblings out of USDA that they are going to take the remaining amount of money that was appropriated by Congress but hasn't yet been claimed by farmers and issue another round of payments or otherwise provide some direct assistance to farmers. So certainly we aren't through the woods yet with respect to the coronavirus pandemic. There's still money available at USDA to help farmers, and we're hoping that USDA here sometime around Labor Day will announce that there is some second opportunity here for farmers to take advantage of this money.
However, not all dairy farmers are fully able to take advantage of CFAP because of the payment limitations USDA is using.
And in particular, there are some farms that are structured as trusts, where USDA has applied a relatively stringent and strict interpretation of the payment limitations. And so that has diminished the value of the CFAP to at least some farms. So we've asked USDA this summer to take another look at the guidelines they're using, particularly in certain counties in California and other places where you have typically larger farmers that are structured a little bit differently.
Lawmakers recently failed to pass another coronavirus stimulus bill, but Galen says those efforts are likely to continue.
So the question is going to be, is there going to be another coronavirus-related stimulus bill, and what might that hold for agriculture? I think it's just too soon to say, but given that we've got a very important election coming up, I wouldn't put money against the fact that there will be another attempt in Congress to come up with more money. The other thing that dairy farmers have to keep in mind is that in October, there will be the opportunity to sign up for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program for 2021. So regardless of what happens in the future with the CFAP or whether there's going to be any other sort of stimulus money related to the COVID pandemic, there's certainly the opportunity to obtain additional risk management through the Dairy Margin Coverage Program. Who knows what 2021 will bring, and that's why we need to have farmers also enrolling in the DMC.
Learn more online at nmpf.org. Michael Clements reporting.
And in other dairy news, a bipartisan group of 25 senators is identifying challenges with implementing several dairy-related provisions in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Underscoring USMCA's importance to the dairy industry, the group asked the U.S. government in a letter to use USMCA's enforcement measures to ensure full compliance with the trade deal. The senators collectively state, quote, "We ask you that you use USMCA's enforcement to hold our trading partners accountable to their trade commitments." The U.S. Dairy Export Council and the National Milk Producers Federation commend the coalition of senators for standing up for dairy farmers, processors and exporters, and pressing for fair and full implementation of USMCA's dairy provisions. The lawmakers say Canada has already begun implementing USMCA in a way that thwarts its market access promises and prevents U.S. dairy from making full use of the trade agreement. There are also unanswered questions concerning how Mexico will translate its commitments to safeguard common name cheese into action. Moving on now on your Friday to State Ag News. Surprisingly, the energy complex is not reacting to Hurricane Laura hitting the Gulf Coast. Harry Cooney with GrowMark FS explains why.
The end of August, a lot of September, is the peak of the hurricane season. And kind of interesting because many years, this last week in August, tends to be finding some type of a storm system of tropical nature down along the Gulf Coast. So that's been the big focus here. But what's interesting with this is that the markets, the energy markets, really have not been getting going on the upside a lot. And it seems like a lot of analysts are talking that it would have probably been more active on the upside, the prices of, let's say, gasoline and diesel fuel, if it weren't for the fact that we have quite large stocks on hand already. I mean, when you look at the stocks of gasoline and diesel fuel here in the U.S., the virus this year has reduced demand down somewhat, and you look at stocks, product stock charts right now, stocks are well over the five-year average range for this time of year. So I think that's one of the main reasons why the price action has been much more muted than what it normally be here now at the end of August, especially with some tropical systems out there.
According to AAA, the average price of gas here in Illinois is $2.39 a gallon, which is 3 cents higher than back in July. Diesel is averaging $2.41 a gallon here in Illinois, which is a penny higher than a month ago. In other state ag news, the Illinois Farm Bureau is continuing to have great success with the Adopt a Legislator program. It pairs county farm bureaus with legislators from the Chicagoland area, according to Illinois Farm Bureau's Mark Gebhardts.
I think the creation of that Adopt a Legislator program over the years has paid so many dividends for us as we have been able to establish relationships, build relationships with new legislators, existing legislators, and our county farm bureaus play such a key role in that as they adopt those urban legislators in that five-county area up around Chicago. We've been able to continue, even though it's not optimal, we've been able to continue those relationship-building activities. We've done a lot of virtual meetings between county farm bureaus and adopted legislators, and we've even had some contact where folks have been able to get the legislators out, or they've been able to try and get to their districts up in northern Illinois. So that continues, and as you said, certainly one of the best things we ever did.
The program was created back in 2001. Farmland values have continued to hold steady throughout Illinois despite the downtrend in the farm economy. Brad Zwilling is a data analyst for Farm Business Farm Management at the University of Illinois.
I look at a number that comes out from the USDA. They publish a farmland value, and then they also publish the Illinois farm real estate value. And a farm real estate value brings into play farmland and farm buildings. You know, a lot of times when we sell those farms, that we buy farms, there might be some buildings on those, you know, a grain bin or a machine shed. So it doesn't have a big impact, but it's kind of interesting to bring that in as well. In 2020, we saw that number just tick up a little bit. We went to $7,400 an acre. That's a 1.6% increase from a 7,280. So it's interesting to see that. And you know, this is the last 3 years prior to that we had, or this is the third year in a row we've seen slight increases. So we've been hanging out at this $7,100 to $7,500 an acre for the last 8 years. We've kind of been in a, you know, kind of just as leveled off and just holding steady right now. We can use that information to kind of think about our balance sheets. You know, that's the first thing we think about. You know, farmland's been a good investment. It's held there. You know, and in your balance sheet, whatever value you're putting on there, and most people want to put that fair market value, they made it pay $10,000 an acre for that. And that should have held at that $10,000 an acre. They should see farmland sales around the area should be holding, and that makes those balance sheets still look strong.
In Iowa, the latest farm real estate average value is $7,070 an acre, $6,600 an acre in Indiana, and $3,400 an acre in Missouri. with $4,850 being the amount per acre in Wisconsin. Finally, now we'll take a look at local ag news. The Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be hosting an informational meeting about wind farms coming up on Wednesday of next week at 6 p.m. at the Farm Bureau building in Hillsboro. Laura Harmon of the Illinois Farm Bureau will be speaking. A Zoom meeting option will also be offered for those who wish to attend virtually or over the phone. Wind energy companies are prospecting acreage and contacting landowners in Montgomery County, and the County Farm Bureau is working to provide an educational opportunity before farmers and landowners get busy with harvest and are forced to make a rush decision. The meeting will address several issues and concerns that may arise with the placement, management, and contract negotiations of wind energy. This will be an educational meeting to assure the members of Montgomery County Farm Bureau have the proper resources necessary for making wise choices concerning their land and its future for generations to come. For more information or questions about the upcoming meeting, you can contact the Montgomery County Farm Bureau at 532-6171 or email Farm Bureau Manager Katie Wilson at kwilson@montcofb.com. Pre-registration for the meeting is required, and a face covering will also be required to attend in person. If you'd like to attend virtually or over the phone, you can ask for the Zoom meeting information at your time of registration, and this is a Montgomery County Farm Bureau member event only. The American Farmland Trust will be collaborating with the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership in the Upper Macoupin Creek watershed to host an informative webinar coming up on Thursday from 10 until 11:45. The free webinar will focus on managing phosphorus and conservation cropping systems. Presentations will highlight current research and management tips for farmers and their advisors on cover crops and other best management practices that reduce non-point source phosphorus loading in Illinois. Participants will be offered 1.5 hours of continuing education credits in nutrient management. The Illinois Upper Macoupin Creek Watershed is listed by the Illinois Science Assessment, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy is one of the highest non-point source phosphorus loading watersheds in Illinois. Speakers for the webinar include Dr. Heidi Peterson, Vice President of Ag Research and Conservation at the Sand County Foundation, Dr. Fabian Fernandez, Associate Professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Nathan Nelson, Associate Professor of Agronomy at Kansas State. The Upper Macoupin Creek Partnership includes a 17-member committee comprised of farmers, representatives from M&M Service Company and CHS and Shipman, also reps from the USDA's NRCS office in Macoupin County, also the Macoupin County Soil and Water Conservation District, and representatives from the Illinois Stewardship Alliance and the American Farmland Trust. And that'll conclude your Ag News here for a Friday morning, but remember you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Friday morning, August 28th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.